Presque Isle Downs on Masters Day. Good morning. Good Monday, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com as well, a bit of a blustery morning here in Erie, off the lake, and thunderstorms strafing the area. There'll be a few more, but what a clever scenario they've offered here at Presque Isle, because the card doesn't start until later. And as a result, they're going to have a beautiful afternoon and evening. They're talking partly sunny later, and it should be perfect. 70s, and the card gets underway at 4:10. Stakes every other race, including and starting with the Gem City, and then later the Dobbins Landing and the Presque Isle Mile, which came up really intriguing. I think I got a price in that race, by the way. And the Presque Isle Masters, the Grade 2 for the fillies and mares, this good field of 11, headlined by Caravelle, Brad Cox, who's really kind of rebooted Caravelle. And Safi Joseph shows up with Artie's Princess. And Michelle Lovell, undoubtedly the disappointment associated with the Iroquois result. And, of course, her camp, not the only one that was disappointed. The scenario there that brought Echo again and Damon's Mound together as favorites, and there were so many heavy favorites. Some succeeded this weekend, and some didn't. But certainly in the Iroquois, that storyline got kind of turned on its ear. And I was sort of front row center for it, actually, which is kind of a funny story that I'm sure we'll get to when we talk to Tom Amos. But anyway, Michelle Lovell and Change of Control, who has the opportunity this evening. The race goes off at 7:19. She's sitting at $953,725. The FedBiz six-year-old mare looking to become a millionaire and maybe more or less, you know, force her way, even though she's a turf horse. This is her first synthetic try, but big performance here might give Perry Harrison and Michelle Lovell pause to consider the Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint. Certainly Caravelle, who is perfect here, as it happens. She's been, you know, very successful on the synthetic. 3 for 3. And, you know, will be a deserving favorite. Luis Saez coming to town to ride. There's some other considerations, certainly. I mentioned Artie's Princess. She's going to have to step up maybe and provide a race. She's 6 for 10 herself. From her days at Woodbine, 6 for 10 on the synthetic. So she's also got an enviable record on Polly, but a lot do. How about Tim Ham with Linguistic at a big price? She's 4 out of 5 in exactas on the synthetic. Good old Jeannie B, the 5-year-old mare, the Bated Breath mare, Michael Stidham. And Jeannie B, 3 wins, 5 seconds, 3/3 in 16 synthetic tries. Excuse me, on turf. That's the turf record, I should say. She's got one. She's 1 for 3 on the synthetic. Anyway, you've got a lot of considerations on this crazy deep card. Pat Morrell is going to come by about the midway point, about 10:30, and we'll talk the handicapping portion, and we'll get some plays. I've got Dick Powell's analysis. I'll get that up at the website, and I will link that out to everybody. Dick has got some things going on at the house. I wanted Dick to come in and, by phone, and the three of us could maybe round table it. But that I don't think is gonna work. Dick begged off, but I will make sure his I'll include as we discuss. I'll give Dick's top plays as well. All right. It is a dynamite card that, and in fact, I talked between talking to Pat Morrell and to Matt Enos. Generally, those that have followed this racetrack are saying it's the best card ever presented at Presque Isle Downs. So happy to be here for it, to say the least. Give you a little bit of a weekend overview before we get rolling. And let me tell you that Nicole Russo is going to join us first. Talk to Nicole in about 15 minutes or so, and we'll do a couple of things. It just so happens Nicole did the advance work. Marcus Hirsch was on vacation this past week. I don't know if he's back yet, but Marcus, I know, was traveling because I reached out to him last week, and he said vacation. So Nicole did the advance for this card. So actually, in addition to talking the insane action at Keeneland, which will be the principal portion of the conversation with Nicole Russo of America's Turf Authority, we will also get her thoughts going into the card because she did all the advance. And I've told you, she can handicap. When she does Breeders' Cup, she does an amazing job, usually the juvenile sprint and the juvenile turf sprint, and sometimes even one of the juvenile turf races. And, of course, those got impacted over the weekend by the summer and the Natalma. We'll talk about that as part of the weekend recapping. And I suppose... I suppose everything on that front goes through Godolphin and goes through Charlie Appleby. Although Appleby was not the only helmsman on the Godolphin rudder. It's crazy. I think they might have won 5 stakes. Just North America. Just North America. I mean, Appleby, obviously, 3 on his own on Saturday. Let's do that. Talk a little bit about Saturday. And I should also, because so many of the stakes from the weekend were incorporated into Beat Beck, let me slip that in. And I don't have Matt's information yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Matt Myers, the Beat Beck winner. And the contest obviously had not through anybody's fault, but the cancellation of that last race at Woodbine, took out the opportunity for anybody at the end. And several people had made rushes toward the lead, or at least to the top of the Beat Beck standings. Last call, obviously, the big price, the Kevin Attard upsetter in the Natalma, and a cap horse paid $44. But don't think for a minute that Matt Myers just basically took a bomber to win, and before the cancellation of the 12th, because he had the lead after the Woodbine mile. So Matt had already forged to the front, and then he distanced himself with the selection of last call. And I'm anxious to talk to him about it, too, because is there anything worse than, for those that, not, you have to be a public handicapper, you could be any kind of a player. You identify horses, you put your plays together, and you run second, third, fourth, and fifth. you had everything doped out except the 20-1 shot that ends up upsetting the race. But congratulations to Matt. He will go to Vegas representing the show, and obviously has the chance to win the NHC, which is awfully important and a great honor and a lucrative prize. However, in addition to the $700,000 plus that he could win as the NHC champion, well, thanks to John Unick and the Insurance Offices of America, the $1 million bonus dangle is out there. So if Matt can get to Vegas in March, win the NHC, Horse Player of the Year, Eclipse Award, $700,000, and $1 million bonus from the show. Very cool. In fact, I got to get John on. That actually would be an interesting segment. I know years ago we had a conversation. Maybe it was with John. There was some, I don't think it was a Mattress Mack deal. It was something else. There was a bonus of some ilk associated with winning some, this goes back, this is probably 10 plus years ago. And I remember having the insurance, the underwriter on. And I know there are those of you out there that are fabulous at this. Whenever I crane my neck and try to think of something like this, somebody remembers. Somebody says, it was so-and-so. It was in 2012. I don't know how you do it. But I'm pretty sure we had an underwriter on that explained how these, how these insurance gambits are put together. How the liability is portioned out. So we'll get between now and March. I promise we'll have John and he'll explain how these work. Anyway, congratulations to Matt Myers. Thanks to everybody. I put up the top 30 yesterday, and in fact, I saved it right here on my computer page. There were so many people and so many familiar names that were coming up and down the board. And Lou Arellano, who we talked to, I'd hear from Lou on Twitter and the occasional email. And Lou, I know, loves listening and so nice all the time. And Lou was poised, and he had driven up the leaderboard to be second. Matt wins with 145.60. And there were actually a couple of people that were in position with certain horses in that nightcap that could have actually reached, I mean, based on the way the board looked at the time. And Matt had gone with, I have it here, actually. I have all of this because I'm I'm insane and I print out everything. And I don't, let me see, did the chart, no, see, I didn't get a screenshot of what the odds were before the cancellation. But anyway, the six horse, Prince of Thieves, was a popular, among the leaders, there were four of the top five that had picked the six, Prince of Thieves, including Matt. Lou had picked the eight, Victorious Wave. I don't have the odds, so I can't really speculate. But anyway, the top finishers, Matt Myers, 145.60. Lou Arellano, 114.70. Well done, Lou. Chris Olson, 111.60, tied with Scott McFadden. Basically for third, and then fifth, Lynn Grace. Lynn, 110.60. Ross Gallo, one of the top players out there. Ross was sixth with 106.10. Mike Riley, 105.60. Chris Bertolucci, 104 even. Ninth or eighth, Mike Cavanna, who's already qualified up, 101.70. Ryan Dickey. Ryan with a good showing, $100.60. Steve Manor, 95.30. Dave Kaiser, who we see on Twitter all the time, was 12th, 94, and so forth. Dan McCormick, 13th. Paul Ossenhofer, 14th. The Maven himself, 15th. Dave Goodfriend, Tom Pogue, 16th. Lou Conston, Frank Foss, a lot of familiar names. Our friend Tony Infante from Tampa, 19th, and Tony had a crazy bomber. He was on the 12 in the nightcap and said that if the 12 had won, he could have actually won the whole thing. And Sharon Rosenblum ended up 20th. So congratulations. Thanks to everybody for participating. I'm so proud to be tied into this. All right, that gets us to, let's stay at Woodbine for a second and hit some of the top lines from the weekend before the guests start to roll in. And I mentioned the sales conversation coming with Nicole Russo shortly, then Tom Amos, and he's going to have Dr. Politi in tow. Spent a good portion of Saturday with Joel Politi, and we had a lot of fun. You might have seen my tweet. Joel was tracking hips on Saturday. A lot of people in the dining room where we were all sitting, a lot of owners had their laptops open and were bidding online, and including Joel. And he tracked a few and had some bids and let a few go. But the one he wanted most, he was able to take home. And so I put that up on Twitter. He got an Omaha Beach Philly bred by Fred Mitchell, Clarkland, and it was very excited. He felt that was the one that he wanted most. And so he was thrilled. And he bought some others, too. He bought a Cantheros, and what else? There was a couple of others as we waited for Tom Amos. Tom and Colleen and Haley. The funny, I'll tell you the story now. I might as well get into this with the Iroquois. I probably should save it. Well, I could save it for Tom. I'm all over the place. I was delighted to be asked to present the trophy for the Pocahontas. And yeah, so I thought the end of the day and looked forward to the Philly race. Except in the paddock, I basically was with the Amoses and Team Amos, and you know, Joe Politi had, you know, two runners as well on the day. And then in the paddock, ahead of the Iroquois, Ben Huffman comes over and says, "Steve, I know we asked you to present the trophy for the Pocahontas, but it's actually the Iroquois, this race." So I was like, okay. I must admit, knowing that this race, who was involved, and you know, the potential importance of the Iroquois Saturday, I was even more, not that I wasn't excited to present for the Pocahontas, but I was particularly kind of tickled. I thought, oh, this is great. So then we're watching the race, and here's Curly Jack, and Amos and wins it. So after basically spent the whole day with the Tom and Joel and Colleen, it was hysterical. And then he upsets the race. This was a very good performance. And you know, he was, if you're a sheep player, Curly Jack was as fast as Damon's Mound coming in. And you know, I mentioned the short prices. There were so many horses Saturday afternoon that were going off at odds on numbers. It was crazy. 2-5, 3-5, 1-5. Hey, come on. The horse in New York. The first out, the Pletcher winner. Right? Expressman. 30 cents on the dollar. Echo again. 30 cents on. Come on. I don't get it. I don't know who's betting these horses at these numbers. So I don't know. Anyway, that's a separate conversation. It's a good conversation, but a separate one. So anyway, the way this turns out, obviously Echo Again and Damon's Mound are sparring, and they get overhauled. It became very clear past the top of the stretch that neither was going to, you know, be able to spurt away. And I mean, they went, you know, considering, you know, the two turns, they went, and that it's fairly early. I mean, for Echo Again, it's his second start. 23-2, 47-2, 111-3. And, you know, as in fact, I think it came up, might have come up with was it with Scott Shapiro about, you know, the potential for a bit of a stagger fest. And it's very early. It's September. So these are lightly raced horses that in most cases were making two turn debuts. And Curly Jack, to his credit, just was a grindy, steady, and just kept kind of coming under Morales. And by the way, with all the conversation we had last week at the end of Saratoga and the end of Del Mar and Colonial Downs and Kentucky Downs, the conversations about Cheminot and, you know, some of the emergent riders that you know, seem to be knocking on the door, this kid, this Edgar Morales, he's, I mean, the fact that Amos is using him a lot tells you something. So Curly Jack with the upset and, you know, went off twice the price. I think he was 5-1 and goes off at almost 11-1. How about Honed, the McPeak? We'll talk to Kenny and, you know, he wins the filly race, obviously, and she was absolutely terrific. And she, I thought she figured prominently, you know, her and the Asmussen, Fun and Feisty, that wins the Pocahontas. And, she was the price basically that, you know, the morning price, Fun and Feisty 6-1 with, Julian Leperoux. And she pretty much dominated that race. And honestly, I mean, in the end, Curly Jack won by what? They call it a length, and Honed was trying to make up. Jace's Road ran very evenly. The Brad Cox, you know, was chasing and then finished evenly. That was not a bad effort. Damon's Mound and Echo Again obviously are going to have to regroup off of this. That was a lot to ask, I thought, of Echo Again. So the two-year-old races at Churchill, a big part of the conversation, and the rest of the stakes action had some interesting results. Obviously, the sprint race, the Open Mind, didn't fall apart per se, but the three top fillies and mares ran, and Bell's the one, you know, kind of, I it wasn't a sparkling effort, really. She kind of was methodical, and it was kind of a perfunctory victory over Sconson. It was sapped of its potential appeal. Yeah, that you can't have, you know, three horse race. It doesn't really do anything to burnish anybody's reputation per se. Joyful Cadence ran well again. The race that was thrilling, that was unbelievable, was the sprint, the Thoroughbred Society sprint race. And any of three horses, including Amos, with the 3-2 favorite, Isolate just ran a courageous race and ran hard every single step. And here came Necker Island and Miles Ahead to kind of surround him and swamp him a little. And just like Marty McGee drew it up, Miles Ahead for Brother Paul wins. Congratulations to Samantha, Samantha Siegel, JMS. Always great for, always happy when Samantha does well. And 746 was your mutual under Martin Garcia. Very good ride. Miles Ahead with the, you know, the surge and the outstretched neck. Margin was two noses. Necker Island was making steady progress to be third in there. Top Gunner was pressing Isolate. And I used Top Gunner prominently. I thought it was the right price. So really, really exciting race. And there was also, let's also, as the thunder rolls in again, looks like we got another set of thunderstorms that are going to hit us. Got to reach out. The Phil Bauer story continues to just astound. Two stake wins this week for the, I'll use that word again, the juggernaut. The Phil Bauer juggernaut, because that's what it is. Unbelievable. Wins at Indy on Wednesday with Fireball Baby and Marcelino Pedroza. And then the Locust Grove goes his way with Joel. Played hard. And I thought this was going to be kind of an interesting race. I picked Lil Tootsie, speaking of Joel Politi and Amos, off the 2 1-mile races, the performances at Ellis and that quasi two turns. You could tell this is just out of her reach. It's just the last few, the last 16th, she just kind of flattened out. It looked at one point at the top of the stretch like she was going to get to Crazy Beautiful, and she did. But then she couldn't outfinish her. Meanwhile, played hard, had struck the front, and had gone on with it for Phil Bauer and Mr. Rigney. And, wow, it's been an amazing couple of months for the Phil Bauer team. So we should probably – I just had Phil, when Phil was on with us from Saratoga, right? That was our – near the end of Saratoga. But we may have to get him back because this was a terrific week. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard that during an interview it was his first graded stake win at Churchill. That's what they were saying. Yeah, because Madison's Luna won the Hutchison. And going back, Channel Marker was his first graded stake win when he won the Jiper in 2015. Forgotten about that. So Phil Bauer, third graded stake win of his career, and he continues to really just send everything out live. Case, let's reach for Nicole and get her in here. I'm 5 minutes late, as usual. I just cannot keep the train on the tracks. Let me give you, because she was with us in person, of course. I actually called Nicole rather than texted her. Sometimes it's gotten. She's someone that I now will always call to try to line up. Because she's not a great texter. Some people are great texters, and they respond instantaneously. Others, not so much. So Nicole is going to join us here next. Rich Migliori, by the way, today, hour two, we'll catch up with Mig, who we haven't had a chance to talk to for variety. You know, it just happened last week. He had a million things. You know, post Saratoga, you have to put your life back in order. I certainly can respect that. And, of course, I turn around and leave to make things even more ridiculously difficult. I take off for 17 days or however. How long is it been? It's going to be. We'll do the recap here tomorrow. And because, you know, the race, I'm not going to start to drive home in the middle, you know, at 8 o'clock. It's 7 hours from here back to Greenwich. But I'm going to stop tomorrow after the show. We're going to stop in Rochester. And in fact, because I hear Nicole in the background, Nicole is a Ra-Cha-Cha area native, right?
Yeah, correct, yeah. Nazareth Academy 05, St. John Fisher 09.
I love it. Well, and we're going to go visit the grandchildren. And I am absolutely coming bearing gifts for the grandchildren. I've got stuff from Churchill. I got T-shirts. I got a bear for Cal. Callum is going to have a little stuffed toy. Then yesterday, I stopped in Washington Courthouse. For those of you that know 71 from Cincinnati through to Ashtabula, up to 90, I stopped in Washington Courthouse. When I lived in Cincinnati, I used to go Washington Courthouse. There was a fabulous antique show every month. And I would always go up to Washington Courthouse a lot to the antique show. But they've got the outlet center there, so I got the kids' clothes. I got I got Lennon a adorable Ralph Lauren denim dress. I got Callum. He got a pair of camouflage pants and a dark olive polo shirt. And I got Lennon. You'll like this, Nicole. I got Lennon. She's going to have her first bag. I got her first Kate Spade.
Oh, isn't it fun to spoil them? I am a big fan of, you know, my nephew, my little nephew who just turned one up in Rochester. He's got, you know, this year I got him his first Kentucky Derby outfit. He had his, you know, bib and everything else from Churchill. And you'd better believe he's going to get a Breeders' Cup care package as well. Lots of fun books. I think he's got, you know, J is for Justify, yeah. D is for Derby. I think next I'm going to have to add K is for Keeneland to the mix.
I love that. And you know, Callum, the little brother, the little grandson, he's just going to be a year in a month or two. So maybe they're potentially at daycare together. We got to find out. We got to see where the kids live in. They recently moved to Honeyo Falls.
Oh, okay. That's a little bit away. That's a little bit away. We're more Ogden, Shiloh area.
Okay. Well, Zach went to. Oh my gosh, what's the Spencer went to U of R, and Zach went to the SUNY.
Yes.
What's the name of that SUNY on the west side?
Brockport?
Brockport, thank you. Yes, there we go. Good, Brockport State. There you go. Thank you. There's our Rochester conversation, and I got to go back actually, Nick. We're gonna miss Far Hills this year because it's Callum's first birthday. So I somehow committed to that. Only to discover that it's the same day as Far Hills. So I can't back out. I've been apparently.
Of course not.
No. So we got a few grandchildren visits here over the next month. Let's visit about what transpired since we spoke last. Nicole provided us when we were live at Keeneland, provided us with the preview of the sale. And it's hard to imagine, Nicole, a week later, that the results exceeded expectation because there was nothing but highly anticipated and, you know, bonanza scenarios being bandied about, and it seems to have just even eclipsed all possible, you know, high-level expectation.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we spoke, it was the morning of the first day of the sale, and now we're at, you know, kind of the halfway point, to give you a capsule. We've got 3 of 6 books in the books, so to speak, and 6 of 12 sessions are completed. And, you know, at this point, the figures have been very strong. You know, the gross surpassed the 300 million milestone yesterday. We're at more than 327 million already. The average and median prices, the cumulative figures for those, are both sitting upward 11% from where they were at this point in 2021. And that sale did finish with record average and median figures. So those, you know, those records would seem to be with, you know, certainly not outside the realm of possibility. It's encouraging that the median is up, you know, by that double-digit figure by 11%, and that the buyback rate is also improved, because obviously we did have, you know, that bonanza of 37-figure horses up front, you know, in books 1 and 2 combined, and that's the sort of number that we haven't seen since 2006, 2007, before the recession of 2008. So certainly the upper market was encouraging, but the median, the buyback rate, those are figures that give kind of more of a snapshot of the health of the market overall, as opposed to the average, which obviously is influenced heavily by that top of the marketplace. So the median and the buyback rate being so improved at this halfway point of the sale, I think, is very encouraging.
Flesh that out a little bit, and you referenced the million-dollar hips, and that became obvious and very apparent day one, And you know, then when they started to clip off, you know, one every, I don't know, one every 15 hips, it became clear that, yeah, that this was going to be just, you know, kind of a eye-popping scenario. And I think we had said last week there were $15 million hips a year ago, and that was blasted by on Tuesday, you know, mid-afternoon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we, you know, like I said, we doubled the seven-figure hips from last year, and you know, these are the sort of figures that have not been seen in more than a decade. You know, and it was very obvious early on that people were there to play. I think it was, you know, hip eight on day one was the first to crack the seven-figure mark. Day two, the second horse in the ring cracked the seven-figure mark, and they continued all the way through the end of those sessions, and then that spilled over into book two with, you know, with so many seven-figure horses there as well. Obviously, the prices go down as we, you know, move a bit further into the sale, but the top price of book three was $900,000, and you look at the buying sheet from yesterday, and you see a number of prominent, noteworthy buyers, you know, still in action, Windstar Farm, Winchell Thoroughbreds. So while the prices are going to go down, the competition is still there and the buyers are still there and the money is still there for these horses that we're going to see in the next few days.
Give us a few of those, you know, some of the headlines when we, you know, start to look at the cumulatives. Let's talk about the buying bench and, you know, the distribution of talent. Because from what I could tell, Nicole, as the Mike Rapoli story started to really, you know, become obvious by Tuesday, you know, the sheer volume, the sheer number. I mean, we were aghast and stunned last year when, you know, he and Vinny Viola bought in excess of 40 hips. They bought another, you know, the Rapoli collectively, another 50% above that. The continuing search for potential stallions, that is a theme that's being widely repeated and is just obvious when you start thinking about what Liz Crow and Brad Weisbord are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Fold in, of course, Donato Lanny and the SF approach. And then there's, you know, some other high-profile buyers. I mean, somebody like Don Adam, who had such an active book one, I mean, has been overshadowed, but he really shouldn't be considering what he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, to touch on the partnerships are really an engine that's driving this market. And, you know, we've seen that. It's been the trend of recent years that, hey, we're going to team up. And, you know, because of that, we'll be able to outslug these other people and B, not be bidding against each other and keep this price down a little bit. And Mike Rapoli, the thing that's interesting to me is, not only has he bought horses on his own and then in partnership with Vinny Viola, which is a very established partnership, but, you know, he's joined up with a number of other partners and individuals, you know, to purchase a number of these horses. I think the tally is at 70 right now through book three. You know, he's teamed up with MV Magner. He and Vinny Viola, I think, have a buy-in partnership with West Point Thoroughbreds. He's teamed up with Eclipse, which, of course, he's had such success with this year with Nest, with Spendthrift Farm. You know, he's jumped in there with a number of different partnerships. SF Bloodstock and Starlight Racing and Mattiket Stable, obviously, they were very active, you know, up front and into book two. They spoke of the difficulty of buying in book one and continuing to build their orders in book two. You know, they made 20 buys, and they're among the leaders by gross at this sale. And right behind those two partnerships, as you said, is Cortland Farm, which bought a number of seven-figure yearlings early on. A lot of fillies to eventually add to the broodmare band there. You spoke about the BSW Crow Colts group, and they've teamed up with Spendthrift Farm. That's a familiar partner for them, and they're trying to purchase classic-type horses. Three Chimneys was very active, and, you know, they formed a number of partnerships as well. You know, Three Chimneys buying on its own, but then also joining up with Mandy Pope on a couple of Colts and Phillies, and with Winchell Thoroughbreds. You know, obviously they're very familiar with each other, campaigning Gunrunner in partnership and getting him off to just an outstanding start to his stallion career. So really, partnerships are one of those engines that continue to drive the marketplace.
Let me swing over to my buyer. There we go, to the buyer statistics. And you mentioned we Rapoli St. Elias, but, you know, then if you fold in all the other configurations that Rapoli's involved in, Lanny with SF and the Starlight Matic at the Avengers, Don Adam, then Mike Ryan. Mike Ryan, almost $7 million. In purchases, averaging just under 400,000, 17 head. Richard Knight, how much more do we know? I brought his name up the other day because we talked to Brendan Walsh at Kentucky Downs on Wednesday, and Brendan mentioned that Knight was going to send him some of these purchases, six of them,
yes,
averaging 800,000.
So Richard Knight is, you know, he is shopping for an international client who he did not disclose, but the horses will be racing in America. And he mentioned, you know, a couple going to Brendan Walsh and a couple going to Graham Motion. So those horses, you know, we'll be seeing in a year or so.
Maverick and Sienna, 11 head for $4.6 million. Dennis Albaugh, who we saw Saturday at Churchill, nine head, averaging 473,000. The St. Elias on its own. Lynn Haven Racing, 10 head, averaging 382,000.
Yeah, Jim and Dana Bernhard, and they kind of became known to us last year. They came in and made their first seven-figure purchase at Keeneland September last year, and you know, this year they're back with a vengeance. So judging by the way they're beefing up their racing stable, I think that's a name we're going to be hearing more from in a number of years.
We look at the sires. Let's get into the sire story. And, you know, not that Into Mischief's performance isn't unexpected. It's Quality Road that's leading in terms of average anyway of his produce that have gone through. 19.6
yeah.
million, 34 head, Nicole, for $577,000 average.
Yeah, and he's leading by average. And, you know, the thing, we had a number of sires in book one who had those multiple seven-figure horses with Into Mischief and Quality Road leading the way. But what really separated Quality Road to me was the fact that, you know, not only did he have the multiple seven-figure horses to take the lead by average early and to hang on to that lead. But then he's got his son, City of Light, behind him with, you know, two seven-figure horses in that group. So, you know, he was the only one of those stallions to have a sire son appearing to be coming up the pipeline right behind him in terms of commercial popularity. And City of Light was very popular with his first crop last year, in fact, siring the Sail Topper at Keeneland September. And then, you know, he was kind of a little bit quiet early on, didn't shine as well in the two-year-old sales, you know, because a lot of his yearlings were kind of with end users at that point. Was a little bit quiet when we started two-year-old racing in April, May, June. But as they've developed a little and as the distances have gotten longer, they've really come on. He has stakes horses to his credit, you know, on both turf and dirt coming up, and you know, really a promising young sire, and I think that's another feather in Quality Road's cap with his performance at this sale so far.
All the usual suspects, as it were, on the atop the sire leaderboard. Quality Road is mentioned. Into Mischief, Gunrunner, just miraculous, averaging 481,000 with 38 head. Curlin, who's been consistent, including Saturday's session topper, approaching a million. Tappet, Medaglia d'Oro, Uncle Mo, Justify, 50 head, averaging 325,000. Not this time. And you mentioned Dennis Albaugh. Joel Politti talked to me on Saturday, Nicole, and Joel really believes in not this time, and that you know, even with him established at this point, that he continues to be a value sire. 21 head, averaging 314,000.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at that 314,000 and then you go to the top of the list where, you know, against Quality Road and Into Mischief numbers. And sure, it's smaller than by comparison, but Not This Time is not standing for six figures like, you know, like those guys are. So it's
right.
Really, he's
exactly.
Really been an outstanding return on investment for the breeders. And then the horses come out and they're just racehorses, you know, they're just solid racehorses. So he is still a sire that's, you know, sort of within reach of your smaller breeder or your breed to race person or your, you know, I'm really looking for a return on investment for my smaller operation. He's still within reach for those, you know, for those types of breeders, and he's giving them a stellar return both in the sale ring and on the racetrack.
Well, precisely. We should mention, too, the first crop stallions, and they'll become an even bigger part of here in week mm-hmm. two as, you know, they kind of fill out the second half of the sale. Omaha Beach, and I mentioned Joel, he paid $200,000. The average has been $242,000 for 46 head for Omaha Beach. So this is a terrific first offering. Audible, 35 head, averaging $221,000. Those are the two early stars here when we look at the first crops that are being brought through the ring.
Yeah, and, you know, that was not unexpected. They both, you know, they both came into this sale with a six-figure career average already from limited opportunities, and we already, you know, you see a wider swath of them here at this sale. Omaha Beach has always been well-regarded, expected to produce nice horses, you know, obviously by Warfront and from an impeccable female family, a grade one winner about around both one and two turns. He's always been well-supported and well-regarded, and he's proving that out in the ring. Audible, you know, a classic-placed grade one winner by Into Mischief, who's emerging as a sire of sires. So, again, this is a horse who was expected to be very popular, and, you know, he's delivering. He sired yesterday's session topper in the Book 3 finale, and, you know, he's continued to be popular.
Well, Nicole, before we turn to your dance work on Presque Isle to the Masters card today, if anybody's watching the weather at Erie, they're saying to themselves, well, I'm not coming here, but don't worry, this latest set of storms is going to pass. We're getting hit again here with a thunderstorm, but and I'm outside, and the temperature has dropped a good 8 or 10 degrees. I put a vest on, which was a good move. Before we talk about Presque Isle, what are you looking toward here the second half of the sale?
Well, of course, I'm going to be looking to see as we just discussed, the first crop sires, it's an opportunity to see more horses by a wider swath of sires. I'm going to be looking for, you know, again, as I said, there's still a number of, you know, kind of big name buyers on the bench, but I'm going to be looking here in Book 4, especially for those pin hookers trying to finish, rounding out some orders at this sale. I'm going to be watching those average and median figures to see how steady they stay as we move into the lower books. There's a lot of momentum coming in here to this second week, and I'll be curious to see what continues.
Nicole Russo, everybody, who's been churning out the coverage for the Daily Racing Forum of the Keeneland sale, and this is the panning for gold portion. This is now the point where everybody is, you know, they may have to forgive a little physical imperfection here or there, and there's going to be vets debating, you know, certain things that they look at the repository and so forth, and certainly, you know, the numbers they'll might come down the scale a little bit, but there's there's every reason to believe, based on every weekend's results, every Saturday, there's horses that earn black type that, you know, did not go in book one or book two or book three. So they came.
Absolutely. You go through the list of graduates of this sale, and, you know, the number of horses who have come out of the second week of the sale and gone on to win, you know, major races. You know, you talk about horses like Swiss Skydiver, Colonel Liam, two Emmys, I believe, was just, you know, a $4,500 purchase, you know, some years ago. So you go through, you know, just the graduates of this sale and where they emerged from. And it's very likely, you know, we're going to continue to see nice horses this second week of the sale.
Nicole Russo with us. Nicole, you did the advance work on Presque Isle, and some thoughts about this Grade 2 Masters. Got a beautiful set of horses. The, you know, track is going to be, you know, it's taking a bunch of moisture here, so it's going to be nice and tight, you would think, for 7 o'clock. It is going to get nicer this afternoon, but we should have a very nice surface for this Grade 2 feature.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing to me this year about this race is the Presque Isle Masters. We've seen a lot of good sprint fillies and mares running in this race on synthetic and then going back to dirt for the Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint. And, you know, you've seen horses in this race like Informed Decision, Groupie Doll, Bar of Gold, who was second a couple of years ago before going on to win the filly and mare sprint. So, you know, it's been a clear path to that race. But you look at the makeup of this year's field with Caravel and Change of Control, both graded winning turf sprinters who are, you know, running in this race on synthetic before perhaps, you know, moving on to turf sprint stakes at Keeneland in October and the Breeders' Cup the first weekend in November. You know, they've run creditably in Grade 1 company. They're both graded stakes winning turf sprinters. Change of Control is a graded winning turf sprinter at Keeneland, so could certainly see her moving on to the turf sprint at Keeneland this year. Caravel is already a great stakes winner on synthetic, doing so earlier this year on the Tapeta at Turfway. So just kind of the different way the connections are using the race this year is very interesting to me.
The Grade 2 has not been run for the last couple of years, and so you have to go back to 18 and 19 when Hugh Robertson brought Hotshot Anna here. People may have forgotten a pair of wins. And before that, here was Josie Carroll and Amise Mesa that won it. Living the Life, those 2 years in a row. Gary Mandela, remember that? And in fact, it's funny how often this race has been run and won by the same horse 2 years in a row. It's happened 4 times. Informed Decision, as you mentioned. Our man Buff Bradley, who we spent a good portion of Monday and Tuesday with at Keeneland, Groupie won it twice, and Living the Life won it twice, as well as Hotshot Anna. It kind of speaks to the synthetic and the way basically it helps horses, you know, stay sound and have long careers. I mean, that 4 and 5, all four of them did it at ages 4 and 5.
Yeah, and you know, this is the sort of division where horses stick around year after year as well. And this race is so, I'm sure they're happy to have it back because it's a rich race. It's in an attractive spot on the calendar. It's sort of in between the summer and fall campaigns. You know, it's a nice race, and it's good to have it back.
Did you get into the mile and some of the other action?
Yes, of course. I think the mile, it's very interesting that you've got, you know, sort of a horse for the course in Carpenter's Call, who's coming off a local stakes win against Title Ready, who's, you know, a veteran campaigner who's never run on synthetic, but who's getting a good deal of class relief. I mean, you look at his past performances this year alone, and you see Life is Good, Nick's Go, Olympiad, Happy Saver, American Revolution. So he's certainly getting some class relief, again, against you know, a locally based horse. So I think that's an interesting matchup.
Well, a terrific card, generally being acknowledged as the best card that anybody can remember here, the most complete card, top to bottom, with four stakes, as well as some very good supporting features and just straightforward maiden and allowance races. Nicole, thanks so much. We'll be tracking week two as well of the Keeneland Sale, the pages of the Daily Racing Forum, and you'll be recapping the stakes action today, too.
Yes, busy day and all friends.
Absolutely. Nicole Russo, everybody, DRF Russo on your Twitter, and does just a great job. And, in fact, I think she probably saw some of the nice response from last week when some people hadn't ever really had a chance to hear Nicole and her, you know, her approach and her insights to the sale, and everybody impressed. Nobody impressed with this weather, and right now just taking on a ton of rain. We're close to the top of the hour, and Casey, maybe we should take the break before Tom Amos joins us, unless you got Tom already. You tell me. What do you think? Amos after? Take the break? Yeah. All right. Let's do that. We'll take a break. Todd Mostoller from the Pennsylvania HBPA has circled back after visiting his horse on the backstretch. We'll talk to Todd, too, this morning. Pat Morrell is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to handicap the card a little bit and get some ideas. Rich Migliori between Pat and Tom Amos. Live from Presque Isle, where it's darker now than it was an hour ago. it's going to clear out. Anybody that lives near a Great Lake, you know what to expect, right? You've seen all this before. Not to worry. All right, worry a little. we head out. How about a little bit on that Woodbine, the rest of that Woodbine slate? And I really, you know, I'm thinking I should have looked at this earlier, because I do have. I do have Charlie Appleby's number, and I really should get Appleby in here. Modern Games, and I, you know, I wasn't against Modern Games per se. I just thought, based on what he's done this year going into that Woodbine Mile, that he was not, you know, not a 4-5, as it turns out, you know, between 3 and 4-5 type of a play. Ivar, I thought, was absolutely the right horse at the right price. And Ivar ran okay. To be second at 3-1. But Modern Games really, really elevated. That was a huge effort. And in fact, I saw where Dave Grenig noted that it's the 112 buyer is the highest turf figure of the year so far. So, Modern Games, who, you know, I really had not had all that fabulous a season up till now. So, that was a big effort, and William Buick rode him with tremendous confidence. He basically sat a little bit, little past mid back. Ivar was farther back, and Talamo kind of ran into a little bit of a bouncy bounce there mid stretch. But it wasn't going to matter. I mean, Modern Games, what did he win by? He won by 5.25 in the end. And Ivar fought past Finest Sound to be second. Paulo Lobo's good efforts continue. So, the Woodbine Mile, to modern games. I mentioned that last call, 21-1, longest shot on the board. The Kevin Attard, one of the three, the the other Attard. Right? Unbelievable. X-Men Racing and SF Racing and partners, this English Channel filly, she was terrific. And big balloons. And, of course, earlier, there was Mysterious Knight, who, for Appleby and Godolphin, who drowned the summer. I mean, just ran off at 1-2. Again, I mean, all these prices at crazy short odds. Lady Spitespear, too, for Roger Atfield and Chuck 50. I needed Hazelbrook, and she ran great. No complaints. Back after this, Tom Amos joins us on the Iroquois Victory.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos with opening day set for Friday, September 16th. Four stakes races highlight the meet led by the Los Alamitos Special on Saturday, September 24th. The meet will feature stakes every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And racing fans, the meet will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 24th. You could win a berth to the 2022 NHC. And racing fans, the best of night racing continues at Los Alamitos every Saturday and Sunday night. Outstanding racing action is in store this weekend with stakes trials highlighting the racing card. Plus, our nighttime $2 pick six continues to be a popular wager. If there's not a carryover going into our Sunday night program, Los Alamitos will add $10,000 to the pick six pool. That's more.